Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to High Speed Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And my name is Ben Bolin. I am a video writer. Scott, I've got to tell you, we both know what's coming up here. We both know what we've been doing for the past few episodes as we're closing out the year.
Yep.
Oh, this is, by the way, this is our last episode of the year. It's nice.
Very good.
It's been a pretty good year.
Yep.
And we've been doing a lot of listener suggestions. We've been really cleaning house with those.
Yes, we have.
There are probably one, maybe two people who were wondering if we were going to get to something they asked us to do.
Oh, I've got a holiday treat for two people.
For two people.
I don't know if it's really a holiday treat or anything, but maybe. We'll just call it that.
Sure, that's festive.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. This is a suggestion, oddly enough, that this is a strange suggestion, and it comes from two different listeners. But I like it. I'll say I like this suggestion. I think it's a good one. First one is from back in August, late August. His name is John from Montana. And John wrote in saying that he would like to learn about some farm machinery, some of the technology that goes into agricultural machines, okay. Tractors, combines, things like that.
Nice.
And then later, this is a couple months later, in December, early December, we got a message from Corey, and I'm not sure where Corey is from. It's not in the email, but Corey says that he would like to learn about tractors as well. And that's from early December. But Corey's email here, I'll read just a little bit of it, says that when you think about tractors, they kind of define speed differently because they get the work done faster. He's right.
That's a good point.
For example, the speed which you can cross a field with a plow now is unbelievable compared to what it used to be, because now these things have 600 horsepower, 12-wheel tractors with, just compare that to, one row, being pulled by a horse. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So now there's some that can plant 60 rows at a time. Also, I'm looking at down the list here, GPS and auto drive functions. So if you have a huge field, you can just with a little bit of programming, you can program this thing to be accurate up to, plus or minus 1 inch of accuracy to where, where everything is planted. Every seed is planted. Every row is laid down. So he says there are even auto-guided machines where you don't even have to have operators. You just program them and let them go, let them do the work for you. But there's just a ton of material on new modern tractors here. And anyways, that's a good idea, Corey, I thought. Anyways, and we'll talk about tractors, but of course you knew we wouldn't jump right in with the modern stuff.
No, that's not our style.
No, not exactly. So we're going to go back a little bit further.
Let's go back a little further.
thanks, Ben, for the peanut gallery stuff there. That's good. But we're going to go back probably to, let's go back to the 1800s. And the only reason we need to go back that far is because that is when a rather unlikely farm machinery manufacturer was born. Any guess? You probably do have a guess.
I have a guess, but I want to save it.
Okay. Ferdinand Porsche was born in 1875. And why are we talking about Porsche? This is the Porsche, exactly what you'd think of, the car manufacturer.
Really?
Yes. Yep. Why are we talking about him? Because in the 1930s, now this is well into automobile production.
Yeah.
Because I think his first vehicle was actually in 1900. So he was a young man at the time, 25 years old. Remember we talked about the world's first hybrid?
Yes.
That was Ferdinand Porsche with the Lohner Porsche, that hybrid gas electric vehicle.
Yes, yes.
In the 30s, this is 34 years later, he decided that he was going to start building farm machinery. So that's what he did.
That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, I know. At the same time as he started working on the people's car, which was the Volkswagen, this is in Germany, remember, he started working on the people's tractor as well because there was a need for economical, dependable tractors at the time. And that was the idea behind the car. People's car, people's tractor. So the projects were simultaneous. And so in 1934, he was already building these prototype tractors.
Which might sound kind of strange to people living today, but, nowadays a lot of people live in a way that's removed from agriculture in a way that wasn't really possible back during that time, right?
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
So a tractor, it makes tremendous economic sense for a manufacturer to also make tractors, just because in certain parts of the world, people would be much more likely to buy a tractor than they would an automobile.
You're exactly right. Yeah. And you know that they built tractors from they produced vehicle tractors. Well, they started in 1934, but the production numbers from 1948 until 1963, which is when the tractor production ended for Porsche, they built around 120,000 tractors. Porsche did, and I've seen some of these in person before.
You've seen them?
I have. There's a Porsche dealership here in town in Roswell, Georgia, and they have a weekend car show event that you know I have sometimes you know stopped in at, and they have a Porsche tractor that they bring out for that. And I don't know if it's someone. I don't know if it's owned by the dealership. I don't know if it's owned by you know a private individual that brings that to the show, but it's really cool. They've got a very distinctive look to them, and if you look up you know Porsche tractor online, you'll see these photos of the Porsche tractors and what they have real just like I said, a distinctive front end that you won't mistake it. You'll know it's a Porsche tractor.
Scott, you know, I think you told me about this. I think you told me about going to the show and seeing this tractor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I probably did, because it's something you don't see very often. They're highly coveted by collectors,
I imagine.
They're restored. They're very valuable. I think they sell, I've got a note here, this is from the, you know, Porsche, there's a registry, as a matter of fact, to keep these things, you know, keep them going, to kind of track where they all are, because, you know, if you find one that's unrestored, or if you find one that's restored, they want to kind of keep tabs on where that vehicle is so that it doesn't just disappear again. But a restored tractor is somewhere in between $15,000 and $20,000. And if you get one that's unrestored, you can find one for about $5,000 to $6,000. So not outlandishly priced, but if you're in the city and you want to buy a tractor as a project, I mean, I don't know, it might be a good idea. It's kind of a fun thing to do.
Just spend some time on it. Be ready to spend some time on
something. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure finding parts isn't all that easy, but, you know, through the registry, that type of thing helps us. You know?
That's probably a great resource.
Exactly. Now, they quit building tractors in 1963. Mm. There's another manufacturer that you'll be, well, you probably won't be, because you were looking up the stuff with me, but I think our listeners might be surprised. You want to hit him with it?
This is my favorite. No,
go ahead.
You do it.
There's an auto manufacturer now that builds tractors. Mm-hmm. That's going to blow your mind if you don't know about it.
Let's just say a very well-known manufacturer now.
Yeah.
Came from the humble beginning of manufacturing tractors.
Very humble beginning. The son of a grape farmer.
Son of a
grape farmer, born in 1916. Didn't start car production until 1960s, but we're talking about tractor manufacturing, or you know, just building these one-off tractors right around the World War II time, which keeps coming up now on our podcast.
Right. But
and then about 1950 or so is when the big production started to hit. But you want to know who this guy is?
Wait, can we get a drum roll?
Ferruccio Lamborghini.
Did you guys hear that? Lamborghini.
Exactly. Lamborghini. So Lamborghini makes tractors, and they currently make tractors. You can buy a brand new Lamborghini tractor this year if you wanted to.
I did not know that.
It has been sold off. It's not manufactured by the same automobile company. There's some type of a split there that happened at some point in history. But it was the same manufacturer. It was the founder of the Lamborghini Automobile Company that started out building tractors in, like I said, right at the end of the war. So you're talking like the mid-1940s, 1945. The idea was that he wanted to, you know, he's back in Italy now after the war, and he started using some of these leftover military engines to produce tractors, which the country desperately needed at the time in order to get back on its feet, you know, to just get things going again. And he was kind of developed this. He was doing them one at a time in just an old barn, you know, building these tractors. And by the time, well, he went to a technical school, so you know he had this knowledge, this technical knowledge. By the time 1949 came around, he had enough money from building these individual tractors that he was able to build a factory. And the factory initially was able to build just one tractor a day. So it had very, very low production numbers at the time. But by 1958, so you're talking just, you know, 9 years later, 8 years later, the factory was building 1,500 tractors each year. So 1,500 tractors every year were being produced by that factory. So Remarkable increase in production.
Definitely.
And, it took off, so it was big for him. They were known for reliability, high quality, because, you know, everything was being made, all the parts were being made within the factory. He wasn't outsourcing any of that stuff. He was building everything himself. It was a scratch-made tractor.
Wow.
Which is pretty remarkable, and they were well-known for reliability. By 1969, that same factory was making 5,000 tractors each year. So the production increased that much more. However, it was sold to a different company in 1972 because there's something about a shipment or something that was a lost order or something like that. And the founder, he lost confidence in the whole thing that it would really work anymore. And I don't know what the real deal or the real story is with this, because it seems like one lost order or one miscommunication wouldn't shake your, you know,
yeah, it wouldn't make you shut the whole operation down.
Exactly. I don't know, but he sold the company in 1972, but by that point he was already manufacturing cars because he had this interest in automobiles. So in 1963 he founded the automobile side of Lamborghini, which is what we're familiar with now, or most of us are familiar with, the supercars, the exotics.
Yeah.
And, from 1963 on, it's been history since then. But you can still buy a Lamborghini tractor to this day if you want to. You can go on the Lamborghini tractor site and order one.
You know what? I bet you. I'm not sure what to bet you in regards to this wager, but we could reasonably assume that there is someone who owns a Lamborghini tractor and thinks it is hilarious to tell people that they own a Lamborghini.
I think you're probably right. You know what? It probably would be kind of funny.
I wouldn't go out of my way to do it, but if I did own a tractor, it would be nice, especially if they're still as reliable as they were.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think that they are. I mean, I can't speak for the quality, but I'm sure that they probably still are. They keep up that tradition, you know.
And one thing that's different, and I'm glad we touched on this subject of reliability, because one thing that is a primary difference between farm machinery, farm vehicles, and a lot of automobiles is the emphasis really on practicality and consistent performance. Mm-hmm. Because, a lot of people will buy a car for their day-to-day needs, and then they'll have their weekend car, you know, their baby that comes out to get a car wash, and it may not be the fastest. It may even, there's some people who love their Edsels, Scott, and they're used to just fixing them and fixing them and fixing them.
Oh, yeah, but the reliability thing is what really, that's exactly, you're speaking to the heart of what got him into the automobile manufacturing business. And you know the story too, right?
I want you to tell it.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Because it's pretty simple, really. I mean, he was an aficionado of automobiles, because I'm sure he had this very profitable tractor company going, and he owned Maseratis, he owned a lot of different types of cars, but he owned a couple of Ferraris. And these Ferraris that he had, these were like, 1960s Ferrari 250 GTs, and I think he had another Ferrari of some kind, another, I forget which model he had, but he was having some trouble with maintenance on these things. He decided that he hated the clutch in the vehicle. He took it in for maintenance, and when they would do the maintenance, I guess they would take it away from him. He couldn't see it happening. He didn't know what was going on, and they'd bring it back, and it'd work for a while, and then it'd break again. And he said, well, something's not right here. I'm paying a lot of money for this car. It's supposed to be the best in the world.
Right.
What's going on? I can do this better. And he said, I do it better with my tractors. Let me do it better with my own cars. And he decided, I'm going to develop my own car company. So that's kind of, so this, I guess the unreliability of his Ferraris led to the, him building his own vehicle, his own car. Based on the idea that he wanted to make a reliable vehicle that would stand up to everyday use.
You know what's funny about that story, Scott? The way that I heard it originally, he told them, you guys are making really crappy clutches. I could do a better job. And he said, oh, well, you should. And then, unfortunately, or to their surprise, he went and did it.
Yeah, because he was talking directly to Enzo Ferrari, right?
Probably,
he was right there at the heart. He was right there at the factory saying, there's something wrong with this car.
Yeah.
So he's probably, being this boisterous to the founder of Ferrari and saying, what's going on here, guys, with quality? I can do it better.
I hope they became friends over the years. That'd be
I
nice
hope
to
so.
Think so.
That'd be nice.
You know what, though? We've got, you know, I'm a sucker for a Lamborghini Ferrari, as are you. But we told these guys we were going to talk about some farm equipment.
Yeah, enough history. Let's move
on. Do you want to talk about combine history?
Give me some of the modern stuff.
Okay, you want the modern stuff.
I like some modern high-tech stuff because you know it all over there.
Oh, well, thanks, man. I don't want to go in too much detail, but let's talk about combine harvesters. Because when people, I don't know about you, but when I think of automated farm machinery and stuff, I'm thinking of what Corey wrote to us about, which it blew my mind at first. I'm not saying I didn't believe it, but I didn't believe it was as efficient. Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely right. So first, and won't do too much history, but just so people know, the reason that combine harvesters are so brilliant is that they can save so much time for a farmer. It does basically six major operations that normally you would have different people doing, and they would take forever, and they would take more than twice the time and do less than half of the work. Yeah,
six different operations all in that one vehicle.
Yeah, it
was doing that much.
Yeah, it cuts standing grain, then it feeds the cut grain to a threshing unit, which threshes and re-threshes the seeds from the heads of the grain. You know, and then it's separated from the straw, and then the threshed grain is cleaned, and then it's collected for handling.
Wow.
And so, you know, now we're doing the modern stuff, so we can't go back, but just so you know, it was a huge pain in the butt for hundreds of years. And so let's go into some of the, hang on just a second, now I'm the guy with the notes.
Okay.
Just for a second, let's go into some of the modern stuff. Let me tell you why, let me give you just some numbers here and then ask you how much you would pay for this. Okay, so
you like that? Price. So like I've got to got to keep a running tally here.
Keep a little bit of a running tally, a little bit. Okay, first off, all combines have these removable heads that are designed for different crops, right? And so when you get a combine, get a combine harvester, you're also thinking ahead, depending on what kind of crop you have, about switching the head out, because there's not a universal one that's ideal for everything.
Mm-hmm. Those big pointed,
right,
terrible looking things look like they could just.
And man, we're talking. These bad boys are 60 feet across. They have nowadays. They do have GPS, and it's within the one inch tolerance.
Wow.
And I don't have the specific brands there, but that's that's quite common. Not only are the cabins air conditioned, but the cabins are also slightly pressurized, so that when you open the door and stuff, air blows out, so that chaff and dust don't come in.
Very nice. Keeps the interior clean.
Yeah, it's such a small idea, but it is so important to
me. Really that's smart.
I wish I could get that in the Monte Carlo, man. That would be awesome.
We'll see what we can do.
Thank you, Scott. We will see. You know, it's
probably just a fan.
It is the holiday season. So you have this thing that will, hypothetically, Scott, you, Farmer Benjamin, you have something that will save you the work of six different groups of people. It'll do it in less than half the probably less than half the time. You'll be able to sit there and ride in it. It might even drive itself. And it can go across, we're talking anywhere from 30 to honestly like 60 feet across.
Wow. It's pretty big.
Yeah, so how much would you pay?
I wouldn't go a penny over $3.5 million. No, I'm kidding. I just want to throw out a huge number.
We can go.
Let's say, well, you know what? So those are big. I'll say they're big, like yacht big. So I'm gonna guess $500,000.
I'm gonna give you a one-time offer because we are friends, and this is reasonable. New Holland has models that go from just $164,000.
Really?
Yeah, and these are smaller. These aren't necessarily the behemoths. But I'm saying there are levels, just like with cars or with boats.
Yeah. Oh, that's a bargain.
You know what? It's a good thing that it is a bargain, because if you think about it, one of the reasons that I thought this was such a great listener suggestion for us to look at is that the evolution of farm equipment really has been one of the only reasons that we are able to feed all the people that live on the planet as often as we can.
Yeah, you're exactly right, because, you know, just looking at the machinery of even, I don't know, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, Or even go back further than that. Think of the ones that you see at the state fair, maybe.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
the steam-powered engines with
mm-hmm.
the cast iron wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Those, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Those, the huge 8-foot wheels that are cast iron with treads molded right into them. Those things, I mean, they're enormous and everything, but you know they're not nearly as efficient as what we have now. And they've just progressed as if needed to. It kind of makes you wonder where they're going to go in the next 10 years or so. You know, what's going to happen?
You know what? That is an excellent question, and I think that Corey did such a good job on listener suggestion that I don't feel like I'm stealing his thunder, but only because we mentioned him first.
Mm-hmm.
They are going into automation for the larger agribusinesses. It just makes sense at this point, because when you buy something like this, of this expense, it's almost like buying an airplane or something, a small aircraft, because you're kind of assuming that you will be using this thing for years and years, because it's not like a car. You know, people will buy a car or lease a car, which we have a podcast about as well, and then they'll get rid of it, you know, in 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, how they drive it.
So you're talking about a tractor that is fully automated. You don't even drive it.
You
just
don't,
let it go.
You, more like you program it. And it has a spot where you can sit in it if you want, but it can also go there. Now before
okay.
Before we get into, you know, I know it seems like a brave new world of robot cars there, but before we just assume that's the end all be all, this, when we talk about these kind of machines, we're talking more about massive harvests of grain, of corn, and wheat. But you know, as you know, there's a lot more focus in several developed countries on localized agriculture, organic foods, and our brother podcast, Stuff You Should Know, does a pretty cool little bit about organic foods. But there are other types of approaches to farming, and you and I we're really focusing on the tractors and the combines because, first off, combines are super cool.
Yeah, they are cool.
I don't care what anyone says. Mm-hmm. I would love to drive one, especially now that driving one would mean that I could, if I had a farmer program it for me, I could just be along for the ride.
That's right.
I could
but
be
that would be
up.
No fun to me. See, you could probably see I'm wringing my hands.
You are wringing your hands.
And the reason is because I'm just thinking of all the things that could go wrong with an automated tractor, an automated combine out in the field.
Yeah.
There's a lot of potential for trouble there, I think. I mean, I know it's down to science, but
mm-hmm.
I got to say, I would much rather be in control of that, but that's me. That's
or if you owned that property, you would much rather have somebody working for you in there.
Exactly. I wouldn't want that thing out on its own where anything could, I mean, I don't know, kids wander out in front of it, or, you know, you left your ranch truck parked out in the middle of the field or something, and, mm-hmm. and it runs over it. I know that probably doesn't happen, but
yeah, I imagine, you know, there are people in there spotting it.
Yeah, you know? I hope so.
They have to be.
I think so. I mean, I have trouble giving up the control like that. It was, you know, mm-hmm. from the automated car episode.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't know. I don't think I could let it go like that. I would have trouble even with, you know, what's that vacuum that vacuums your room?
Roomba.
Oh, the K. I couldn't let that happen.
Really? Are you
no.
serious?
No.
That's crazy, man. Those things are awesome. I want one.
Yeah, probably. But
I want one, but I don't think any animals that I have in my house would tolerate it.
Mm.
It would be seen as an enemy, an encroacher.
Yeah.
So who knows how they would react around a combine harvester.
Yeah, well, I hope they'd have the sense to stay away.
Mm. Plus, this really got me thinking about all the different types of skills that are actually needed to work in agriculture, and it's really good for us to take a look at that.
Have you ever driven a tractor, Ben? We'll make this the quick wrap up here.
Okay,
yeah, you ever driven a tractor?
No, but I rode in one because since I'm from Tennessee, my grandparents had a farm, and
that's why I asked.
Yeah,
I figured you're in that kind of region that you might have.
Yeah, I didn't get to drive it though. I was too young.
I mean, I had a small garden tractor for a while. You know, just
really?
A little just. You know, mow the yard type garden tractor.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And when I grew up, I spent summers on a farm in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time on a tractor before I even learned how to drive a car. But nothing as big as these cool combines. I've seen them operating, but mm-hmm. I've never even gotten a ride in one. But I think it'd be really cool to be, you know, 20 feet up,
yeah,
you know, doing an entire field for an afternoon or whatever. I think it'd be fun. I'd don't know. I'd be interested in seeing what that's all about.
It's not even a driver's seat. It's a command center in there.
A command center. It's like you're in the cockpit of a plane, really.
Yeah.
And yeah, really cool.
They kind of are in terms of size.
Check out the new combines online, and you'd be surprised to see the progression, you know, where they are now, because there's a lot of technology going into these things. More, you're looking at, like, the top-end cars. Like, what's available in the top-end cars that you see every day on the road in farm machinery now. So, they've had humble beginnings, but they've come to the point where they're just these, top-of-the-line, almost exotic farm machinery. It's really, really cool.
So if you haven't seen these yet, or you haven't gotten a chance to take a look at them, please, just even an internet search, call somebody you know, because these are
call somebody
cool.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, call, well, don't call a stranger, I guess.
Yeah.
You could.
Yeah.
But I guess that about wraps it up for us today.
Sure. That's all I've got on tractors. Really.
And for this year, huh?
And for the year, yeah, that's right.
So thanks again for tuning in, everybody. Happy New Year. We hope that you have had fun listening to the show over the past year. And if you have anything you'd like to tell us, any topics, any suggestions, as always, please send our whole crew an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.